If you make someone feel guilty because they don't do what you want them to do, at a minimum, listen to my other podcast, Love and Abuse, and that will help you understand emotionally abusive behavior. If you can't seem to stop hurting those you love, check out my program that helps you do just that over at healedbeing.com.
Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now.
Hello and welcome to the show. My name is Paul Coliani, and I want to help you increase your emotional intelligence, handle toxic situations with grace and ease, and give you the tools to show up as your authentic self. This show consists of my personal opinions and is meant for informational purposes only. But don't let that stop you from healing and growing and improving yourself in any way possible. That's what I'm here to help you do if you need it. If you don't, fast forward to the part that you do. Fast forward to the part that works. I want you to get what you need from a program like this. And without further ado, I'm going to try to give you something that you might need. It might apply to you, but I know it applies to this person who wrote. I'm going to read her letter right now. She said, "Thank you so much for the podcast. I have faded on some friendships because of certain hurtful incidents. One of them was my friend using me as a filler for the evening and purposefully hiding their wedding from me, but inviting other friends. Another friend never told me they were relocating, and I only found out through a mutual acquaintance. These friends swore that we were close. I wasn't expecting them to put me first, but getting to know their life events from random people left me wondering how close we really were in the first place. I felt I was being used until something better came along, and then they just decided to discard me. No apologies, no explanations. I distanced myself, but recently they've tried to reestablish contact. I feel wary, and I am unsure how to trust and invest, or if I should invest, in these relationships. They're not toxic, and cutting off contact seems like overkill. How can I approach these relationships to keep friendships, and where do I draw the line without letting myself get hurt or feel used?" All right. Thank you for writing that. Thank you for sharing that. I have to make a couple, or at least one assumption about you, and I might be completely wrong, and forgive me if I am. I'm just letting you know that I'm giving this my best guess. So give me some leniency when I tell you this, but it is difficult to be in a friendship when you are at all in any way more of the people-pleasing type, more of the depending on other people's opinions and perspectives for your self-image, for your self-worth. It is more difficult to be in friendships when you have any type of, how can I say this? I don't want to be insulting. I'm going to say this like this because this was me. And this is why I'm telling you this. It's hard to be in a friendship when you are needy of that friend. This may not be you at all, and I apologize if I'm offending you, but I'm giving you my perspective from my own experience in my life. It was very difficult for me to have friendships because I was needy in those friendships, almost a desperate neediness, because I wanted to be with them, and I felt offended when I wasn't invited to places or when they would do things without me. I mean, not with all friends, but with some friends, because it would hurt my feelings. It would hurt my feelings when they did stuff without me. So this is why I'm asking. Now, this may or may not be you at all, and if it isn't, again, I apologize, but the person I was very needy and dependent. Even just a little bit, it can turn some people off. If this doesn't apply at all, then don't listen to me. Don't listen to this. But I do want to at least bring it up just in case it is a situation that exists. It doesn't mean that these people haven't done you wrong or did something in a way that wasn't very friend-like. I'm going to talk about that in a moment. But I just wanted to get that out of the way just in case that happened to exist. So if you find yourself more needy or somewhat dependent on other people to make you feel worthy, to make you feel happy, to bring joy in your life because it's not there unless other people exist, if you know what I mean, then it's possible that it comes across. Some people don't appreciate that. Some people don't want that or need that in their life. And so they tend to stray away from people like that. In fact, if you've listened to my episodes where I talk about people pleasers or the kind that might have this slight desperation or neediness in them, sometimes people pleasers are like that. Not all people pleasers, you know, but this is what I've seen before. Rescuers, fixers, people pleasers. There's a need for attention. There's a need for love. I mean, we all have needs. We all have these very similar needs, in fact. But some of us have, it's coming from a place of fear, like the fear of abandonment, the fear of rejection. And so when we have friends and we have a fear of rejection or abandonment, and or we have low self-worth or any inkling of low self-worth, then we're going to be more afraid or offended by people that do things without us, especially when we believe that, hey, we're best friends and we hang out together everywhere we go and all the time. So why aren't we together now? So this may have no relation to the situation that you talked about, but I wanted to get that out of the way just in case that was something that you feel might be a part of you. Because if it is a part of you, then that desperateness or that neediness comes across to others. It's like, I think the way I used to be in relationships in my past, I would be clingy, needy, and I believe smothering. I think that word might have been used. She said, "You're smothering me," or something. I couldn't be away from them because I had such fear of being alone. Not that I was afraid of being alone, but I was afraid of them leaving me. I was afraid that if they found somebody else, you know, that was my thought back then. If they found somebody else, they could leave me. So I want to be with them all the time. And if I'm with them all the time, it's constant reinforcement that they still love me, and constant reinforcement that I'm not alone, and constant reinforcement that I am worthy of being in this relationship with this person. The problem with that is it did feel smothering, and none of my partners liked that clinginess. They liked it at first. That's often what happens, is like, wow, this person loves to be with me all the time. This is what they're thinking. And, you know, I'm putting words in their mouth, but this is what I think they were thinking. They love to be with me all the time. I love that. I love the attention. They shower me with love and compliments. I love it. And what ends up happening is if that doesn't end, that constant wanting for attention, then they feel it as a drain on them instead of a boost. In the beginning, it's a boost. They love it. They want more of it. I mean, most of my partners, they wanted more of it. They loved it and they soaked it in. And then as things settled, they wanted to start living their life again, being an independent person, except sharing life with me. This is what I believe a good romantic relationship consists of, or any relationship really, is two independent people that have their own lives getting together, still have their own lives, but share those lives with each other, or at least parts of those lives with each other. And when they do, everything is copacetic. Everything is great. You go your way, I'll go my way. Hey, let's get together and do this together. It can even happen when you're married. You go in your room and put together your fly collection, you know, fishing flies, and I'll go in my room and I will do some welding, whatever their hobbies are. You do your thing, I'll do my thing. I'll watch TV while you cook us dinner. I know it's not a hobby. Well, sometimes it is, but you know what I mean. It's being independent together. And friendships should be like that too. And maybe they are for this person who wrote them. Maybe they are for her. Maybe that's how it's always been. Yet she has found people that maybe aren't necessarily the best friend that she thought that they were. Because we know who best friends are. They love to get together anytime. They'll jump at the chance. If you call and say, hey, let's get together, they'll jump at it. They love it. That's what I think of best friends. That's what I think they do. I think friends just love to be together. And also, friends love to be honest with each other. So coming back to this person who wrote, where is the honesty in the friendship? And I'm going to ask you from both sides. So this is the first thing I thought of before I thought of what I just told you, actually. The first thing I thought of is when this happened, when your friend like hid their wedding from you or moved to a new location. I think that's what you meant by relocation. When these friends did these things and didn't tell you about it, what did you do or say? I think that's an important question because you felt something inside you and you thought something inside you. So the question is, did you say anything to them? Well, if you didn't want to make waves, you probably didn't. And if you didn't want to be confrontational, then were you as honest as you maybe could have been? Honesty works both ways. And again, I don't know if this is you. I'm making a lot of guesses from what you wrote. But in my experience, when there are friendships that aren't as bonded as we thought they were, or as honest or open or transparent as we thought they were, then there might be other things going on. And in my experience, this is some of the stuff that I've seen go on. And my own personal experience, not just working with clients and such, but in my own personal experience where I was able to drive friends away and friends were able to drive me away from behaviors that we do. So that's why I ask, if you felt something and you thought something like you shared with me, you probably felt hurt. Did you tell the person who hid their wedding from you, hey, it really hurt me that you didn't invite me to your wedding? I wonder if you asked that. Maybe you did. And if you did, I think you're doing your part as a friend. Because a friend is going to be sad that you weren't a part of something special to them. And who knows why that person didn't invite you, but you may find out it's something that you didn't expect. What? You told me you were going out of town. I didn't invite you because I thought you were going to go out of town. It probably isn't that, but it could be. It could be that, but you'll never know unless you say something or ask the question. Because I know what I would do. If I found out my best friend got married and it was, you know, fairly easy for me to get to their wedding, you know, if it was within a certain number of miles or something, you know, they lived up the street or whatever, I would be surprised, first of all. I don't know if I'd be hurt. I just think I would find it unusual. Also, how would I not know the date? If we were friends for all this time, how would I not know the date of the wedding? So I think if you knew the date, that might be something else. But if this person just got married out of the blue and they never told you, they never talked about it, they never shared any of this stuff with you, what's up with that? That's a little strange. So you didn't mention how that developed in your message to me, but I would want to know why this was never discussed and then suddenly they're married. I mean, did you know they were in a relationship? I'm hoping you did, but maybe you just didn't realize they were going to get married, which brings up the thought that perhaps they weren't sharing a lot of things with you. And so where I go with that is when they share something with you, this is also another angle that I can't really tell from your message, but this is another thing I've seen. When you share something with somebody, are you highly opinionated about it. And that includes being critical or judgmental or deflating someone's sales. If this person wanted to get married and they knew that if they told you about it, you would say, yeah, but don't you think it's a little too soon? Then that person may not tell you. Maybe they don't want their sales deflating. Maybe they don't want anyone to give them any doubt whatsoever. So if you have been the type of person that has been opinionated or critical or judgmental, or you just want to make sure they take the right path all the time, you know, you're a kind of a teacher fixer, that might be another reason that you get left out of certain details of people's lives. Just a guess, maybe not, may not apply to you at all, but I'm putting that out there just in case it does, or it applies to anyone that might be in a similar situation. Because it's funny, my girlfriend is, I don't know if she's highly opinionated, but she definitely has opinions. And there are times, I believe, in the length of time that I've known her, where people, I believe, probably should have included her in some information that was pertinent to her, but didn't. And it was offensive to her. She asked, why wouldn't they tell me this? Why is this not something that we can be open about and talk about? And I believe, and I could be completely wrong, and I'm not trying to put her under the bus or anything, but I believe that they're afraid of her honesty. I believe they're afraid of her directness. So it's not so much that she's highly opinionated, it's that she just says it like it is. She tells the truth. She's very direct. And some people don't want that. And it's really strange to me. I would rather have somebody be direct with me. But some people don't want that. Some people want to continue floating on the clouds and thinking that the clouds are solid. I hope that metaphor works, but that's what I'm thinking of, is that some people just want to live in their, I guess, fairyland, some dreamland scenario, not hearing all the facts, living in denial, and not wanting to hear actuality, you know, reality, actuality. So they avoid people that are straight shooters. This can be your situation too, or only. It could be any one of these scenarios that I'm unfolding here, but that can be a situation as well. Now, the honesty works both ways, like I said. However, if they have not wanted to share things with you in the past, for whatever reason, then it makes sense that they wouldn't share certain things with you now because they don't like the way you respond, or maybe they think they'll hurt your feelings or whatever it is. But people like this, there are reasons they do things like this. And it could be because of how you respond or react. Or, and this is probably one of the final things I'll say, they could just not be as close as you thought they were, like you said. That brings it full circle to what you said earlier. Maybe they just weren't as close as you thought they were. And if that's the case, that's really strange, because you thought they were close and you're sharing all this stuff. But it is important to understand that some of us aren't compatible and are afraid of confrontation. So this is where the honesty works the other way too. If your friend shared something with you and they didn't like the way you responded, or they didn't like how you supported them or didn't support them in what they shared, then it's possible that they don't want to confront you with the truth and say, hey, look, what you just said really hurt my feelings or deflated my sales. And I didn't want that. I wanted to continue to stay motivated, but now I feel demotivated. You just made me feel like my ship sank. So now here I am. I was so excited. And then I share it with you and you bring me down. And that may hurt to hear, but I think a good friend's going to say something like that because they want to keep the friendship, and good friendships require a bit of honesty. And so when you have an honest conversation like that, normally the friendship, if it's a good friendship to begin with, will get stronger. The bond will strengthen and you'll feel closer. This is what happens in romantic relationships too. When these hard conversations are had, the relationships that last the longest are the ones that survive the hard conversations. So if there's anything that feels like a confrontation, but you know if you don't talk about it, it's going to eat away at you and continually be on your mind, then by not having the conversation, you're not having as close a friendship as you want. And if you are in this space where you have something to share, but you don't share it, and it's in the back of your mind all the time, then you can't show up as transparent and connected as you want. Because there'll always be something in the back of your mind, and it'll just continue to bug you. And so when it bugs you, you bring that feeling into the communication and the friendship. And of course, where does it go? It's hard to grow a friendship when there's something constantly bugging you. It's another issue I've had in my past. But I think about friendships now. Like, we have, my girlfriend and I have a couple friends that we've known for years and years, and we decided we were going to make a conscious effort to connect and reconnect and reconnect, meet up, and just have a great time together, make game night, meet at a restaurant, do whatever we can to continue to be a couple that meets another couple, to strengthen a friendship that has been around for years, but we've just never invested as much as I believe and she believes we should. Because good friends are great to have in your life because they help you connect with other parts of yourself. When you live with somebody for a long time, let's say in a romantic relationship, whatever is going to come out of you has come out of you. Whatever parts of you that you want to connect with inside of you, if you've been living with them for a long time, that's probably the extent of it. Unless you explore a lot, unless you really are more independent and you explore every part of yourself, typically a romantic relationship will be great in so many ways, you know, a healthy one, but there's only so much you can expand yourself. Not all relationships, but I've seen this a lot in most relationships where you are with somebody and you can expand yourself only so far. For example, let's just say that you like to tell a lot of dirty jokes. Not a big fan of dirty jokes, but if you are and your partner isn't, you really can't expand that part of yourself. You really can't explore it. You really can't release it, you know, let it out. This is why a friend that loves dirty jokes would probably be great to hang out with. And this is why when you're with somebody for a long time, you can only expand so far. So having friends helps you expand beyond the current limit that you're at. And maybe you don't feel limited. If you're in a relationship now, you may not feel limited, and that's okay. But there are two people there. One of them may want more experience outside the relationship to help them connect to a part of themselves. I know a kid that builds model trains, loves model trains. His brother doesn't. So he needs friends outside of his family that appreciate model trains. And sometimes that's what you have to do. You have to expand yourself, expand your reach into other people's lives so that you can connect at a deeper level with a part of yourself. And that helps you expand yourself. And so the point I want to make with this last comment is that you have to put in a lot of the investment as well. As far as if you are doing something and you invite that friend, then it shows that you want to spend time with them. If they don't invite you back to the things that they're doing, then we have to be conscientious that maybe they don't want to spend the time with you, or maybe they can't. Like, we have another friend that we love spending time with, but she never really invites us to anything, not because she doesn't want to. It's because she's so damn busy. She just has so much going on, and she has just a lot of things going on in her family. But when we spend time together, it's quality time. We love spending that time with her, but she just doesn't have time to reciprocate, and she rarely has time to see us. So there are people like that too, that are just too busy. It's just going to happen. And you have to value what you have and the time you have with them. And that's what we do with her. But there are other friends that they have more time. And we just have to notice, this is where I'm going with this, is we have to notice if it's reciprocal, if it's a desire, like, wow, you just invited me to dinner. This is awesome. I love spending time with you. And then in a couple of weeks, they invite you to dinner and you feel like, hey, this is really cool. We're going back and forth. And not everyone has the time that maybe you have or not, but you can feel the differences. And there are also people that have so many friends that you are one of many because they are a total extrovert or whatever. I'm not saying that only extroverts have a lot of friends, but that can happen, is that you have an extrovert friend that has lots of friends. It's not that you're not special. It's just that you're not the only one. I don't know what that means for this person who wrote, who said they weren't invited to the wedding. I don't know if they met their head count and they just couldn't invite anyone else. I don't know, but that's why it's so important to say something. Oh, you know, I wanted to be at your wedding. What happened? I feel hurt that I wasn't at your wedding. I missed it. That might be the conversation. That might be the conversation you've already had. I don't know. But if you never bring it up, then you never find out. And if you never find out, you just have this feeling that maybe they don't like me, or maybe I said something wrong, maybe we weren't as close as we could have been or should have been. I don't know. This is that unfinished business I've talked about in the past, where you have this open loop. It stays open until you close it, until you reach closure. How do I reach closure? I gotta ask them. I gotta say something. I gotta tell them how I was hurt. Or at least ask them, what happened? I didn't know you were getting married. What happened? Because it could be completely innocent as well. I think I've attacked this at several angles that hopefully give you some direction to go with it. I know that good friends are hard to find. I mean, I've moved around so much. Like, I lived in Florida for a long time and I made some good friends there. But then I met a woman, I got married, I moved to California, I've been to Oregon, I've been to New Hampshire, I've been to North Carolina, I've been everywhere. I've been to so many places. And because of that, because I moved around so much, I never established myself to make some more good friends. And so now I've been in Georgia a good, 8 years now, 7 years. And I'm just establishing good friendships now. It doesn't help that I'm an introvert. It doesn't help that I don't go out much, get out of our house. But we are starting to do that because we realize that we need more people in our lives to help us connect with those parts of ourselves that we want to connect with. I do believe that when you're in a relationship, you will only go so far. It's very similar, and this is my last, I swear, my last comment. It's very similar to watching a TV show where every character is a little different and maybe even an aspect of yourself. And the example I like to use is Star Trek. If you've watched Star Trek The Next Generation, you have Worf the Klingon, you have Captain Picard, the captain, you have Deanna Troi, the psychic empath, and William Riker, the first mate or whatever he is. So there's all these characters, and yes, I'm revealing my nerdy side. But all these characters exist, and it took me many years after the show was over to realize why I liked this show so much. It's because every one of those characters represented an aspect of myself that I hadn't either fully explored or really liked and wasn't connecting with. Worf the Klingon, who has no problem dying for his honor. I mean, that is a strength that I wish I had. So when I see him acting on the screen, or when I see him doing what he does, I feel like I'm absorbing a part of that. When I watch him, I feel stronger in myself. And then when I watch the captain do something, he is diplomatic, but he is stern, he is assertive, and he makes decisions, hard decisions, fast, as fast as he can. But when he makes those decisions, he sticks with them. And you may have heard my episode on decision making. If you haven't, go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com, type in decisions, and you'll see I've made episodes on that. And I didn't really think about that until now, that the way I make decisions now is based on how he makes decisions on the show. I know he's a fictional character, but give me a moment here. The way he decides is there are risks. I mean, there are always risks in his decision-making, the bigger ones. And I've realized that I need to weigh the risks and make a decision, even though I could be wrong. And that's what helped me become a better decision-maker. I started making quicker decisions, even at the risk of being wrong, because that's what Captain Picard does. And so that's what I started doing. And I really didn't connect the dots until now. And I'm not saying that he was the only reason I started doing that, but I think he was highly influential in my decision-making process, or at least his character. And so the reason I'm mentioning that is the show and other shows like it and other movies have helped me connect with parts of myself that I wanted to be and I wanted to grow. And so that can happen. And we have to allow that to happen. And this is what happens with friendships too. Friends represent parts of ourselves. That friend is funny and that friend has no problem saying no. And that friend charms people, and I want that charm. I want to know how to do that. And that friend knows how to fix cars, and I just pay him to fix my car or something like that. But that's my whole point on friendships and making friendships. I think friendships are an important part of our life. And if you are an introvert and you feel like you could be more, not more than an introvert, but you could expand yourself in ways that might strengthen who you are, many aspects of yourself, then certain friendships can do that. And even certain things on TV and in movies, there are certain characters. So to the person who wrote, thank you so much for sharing this. I hope you're able to figure this out and get through it. Maybe something I said really helped today, or maybe I completely missed the mark and you'll just have to let me know if that's the case. Otherwise, I wish you the best with this. And know that you are a great person. It's just that some people can't see it. They don't have the vision. They don't see the person you are. Not everyone is capable of seeing the real you because they're so clouded by who they are sometimes. So don't take so many things personally. Everyone has their own life. Everyone's doing their own thing. I barely ever talk to my siblings, even though I love them and they're great friends to me. I know that they are so busy with their lives. If they do something special and I'm not invited, I definitely don't take offense to it because they get so much going on. And, you know, that's what I've noticed as well, is that people with families, they just have a lot going on and they can't invite even their good friends to some of these things. And sometimes it just doesn't work that way. So not everyone excludes people on purpose. I don't know what happened in your case, but that might be a conversation you have. Hey, why didn't you invite me? Hey, why didn't you tell me you were moving? I hope this helps either way. We'll be right back after this. Friends are very helpful when you're trying to sort things out, when you're trying to figure something out in your life, trying to heal from something or even help you stop anxiety and depression. I think friends are great for that. And sometimes they can't help. They can't help at all. And when they can't help, it's important to have alternatives. One of those alternatives is shows like this. Another alternative is therapy. And I love talking about BetterHelp because they offer online therapy that you can get through video, phone, and even live chat sessions. So you don't even have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to, which is great for us introverts. I like seeing people on camera, but there's the option. You have that option with BetterHelp. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. As soon as you sign up, in a couple days, you'll have somebody to talk to, and it gives you an opportunity to unload the stressors and get some unbiased feedback. You know, you have friends, and then you have professionals that have actually dealt with some of the stuff that you might be going through. Not that friends couldn't do it too, but professionals do this all the time, and they may have just the solution you need. So that's why BetterHelp exists, and I highly encourage you to check them out. I think BetterHelp is the perfect sponsor for this show because it complements what we do here, and it takes you to the next level of getting that personalized guidance that you might need. So if you're looking for help through any type of stress, anxiety, any relationship issues, even sleeping issues, and how about family conflicts? They cover almost anything you're going through. They have counselors in all 50 states, and they are ready to talk to you. And they're offering the Overwhelmed Brain listeners 10% off your first month if you go to betterhelp.com/brain. That's two words, better, B-E-T-T-E-R, and the word help, help.com/brain. I want you to start living a happier life today. Head over to betterhelp.com/brain. That's BetterHelp, help.com/brain. And they'll match you with the perfect therapist for you. And then we go from friends to fiends. One of my favorite mobile puzzle games, Best Fiends. I know we're not supposed to use our phones in bed, but I do. At night, when I am not exactly ready for sleep, I will get out my Best Fiends and I will start playing it. And I will play it until I get tired. And I don't do that every night. I do it a lot, though. And so I enjoy it. I like to share it with you. It is a mobile puzzle game that anyone can download and play, whether you have a few minutes or a few hours. It's the perfect puzzle game to lose yourself in because you're having so much fun. It features tons of cute characters that you can evolve, and you can solve thousands of fun puzzles. And the more you play, the more characters you can collect, and the more you win, the more challenges you face. So it's really something that continues to reward you and just enjoyable to play. So I want you to check that out over at Google Play or the Apple App Store. That's Best Fiends, friends without the R. And Best Fiends has over 100 million downloads. And I think I told you last week or the week before that I'm on level 400 and something, and I was way off. I'm just past level 200. It was my girlfriend that was on level 400, and I think her mom has blown us both away. And I guess my girlfriend's better than I am at the game, but she will look at me and say, oh yeah, I remember that level. And I don't know if she's being snooty, but she's on this higher level that it's just taking me a while to get there. But I'm going to continue to play it until I'm caught up, and hopefully she takes a few days off so I can catch up. Head over to Google Play or the Apple App Store and download Best Fiends for free today. That's Best Fiends, friends without the R. Welcome back. I'm going to change gears really quick here and read you a message from someone in the Healed Being program. The Healed Being program is a program I offer for those who are the hurtful one in the relationship. If you found that you are the difficult one, you are the emotionally abusive one, head over to healedbeing.com. There's a lot of people experiencing a lot of good changes over there, and I'm going to say I'm proud of them. I'm proud of these people that are going through this process and healing and changing through some very difficult and very old patterns of bad behavior they're learning about so that they can experience a lighter way of feeling and better relationships. So that's over at healedbeing.com if you're interested in that. But this person wrote, this question doesn't have anything to do with emotional abuse. He says, I think most of my life I have been in a high-functioning depressive state, and I have a habit of doing just enough to get by. I didn't notice it until my wife was depressed, and she said that week that she would do just enough. I sadly do it in every aspect of my life. I feel like I'm better now, but I feel like I still have a habit of doing just enough to get by. What is your suggestion on building mental fortitude to setting goals and not quitting after a few weeks or when it gets hard? How do I build mental fortitude to press forward to achieving my goals? Thanks for sharing that. Thanks for the really good question. And it's a very difficult question for me because I'm not the motivation guy. I'm the practical guy. I like to do things practically instead of saying, just go out there and do it. But I do have some thoughts on this. I do have my own personal way of doing things that may or may not be helpful to you. And I hope it is helpful. I do believe that when you are in a certain state of mind, that it's very difficult to move forward. So I like to find out why I'm in that state of mind. And one of the things I've done, and I have shared this on the show before, but I'm going to tell you what I do, is just write my name on a piece of paper, put a circle around it, right in the middle, right in the middle of the paper, and then draw lines out from it with other people's names in my life. And any of the major things in my life, like I've got my mom, my stepfather, my sisters, my girlfriend, I've got my house, I've got my truck payment, I've got my this and that and this. So I have all these major things in my life, major influences in my life, and they're all stemming out from me. And I'm going to look at this piece of paper and I'm going to ask myself for each one, how I feel about it. Okay, there's my mom. I feel great about my mom. That's great. Okay, so she's not really affecting my life in any negative way. Then I'll go to my stepfather. Oh, my stepfather, ugh. I'm not too fond of that. Okay, now I'll go to my siblings. Oh, that's great. I love my siblings. And then I'll go to my house payment and my car payment, and then I'll go to this other stuff, my job and other things in my life that are I consider major. So I'll just ask myself how I feel about those things. And that gets me going. That helps me understand what's going on in my life. What are the major influences in my life? And then I will cross off one at a time the negative ones, the ones I don't feel good about. So let's just say I crossed off my stepfather. And what I'm doing is saying, this person doesn't exist anymore. Disappeared. I'm not saying he died. I'm just saying doesn't exist. How do I feel about this? You know, looking at my life with all these stems coming out and this stem, this person no longer exists. How do I feel now? I mean, in general, how do I feel? Well, with this person no longer in my life, that feels pretty good. I don't have to worry about it anymore. And what it did was release a burden inside of me. It released like a stressor. So I took that stressor out of my life. Now, how do I feel about my life? So that's like this first part. Now you go to the second person or major influence or even events in your life. Like this event is happening in my life right now and I can't get out of it. Okay, what would happen if you crossed that off? That doesn't exist. Gone. Scratch, scratch, scratch. How do I feel now? And you keep doing that for all the negative influences, looking at the overall big picture and asking yourself how you feel with each one until you finally reach a point where the biggest burdens in your life are gone. And then you ask yourself, if these burdens or if these people or places or things didn't exist in my life, would I still feel the same way I do? And in this person's case, would I still have difficulty achieving some of my goals? So that is a good place to look. I'm not saying it's the solution, but it could be. But once you look at taking out the negativity in your life, you find out if that negative or if those negative events or people or places or things are affecting your life. If they don't exist, then they don't affect your life anymore. And does that change your life? Because if it does, maybe it's not about really your lack of motivation or any type of depression or even laziness. Maybe it's not any of that stuff. Maybe it's a burden that you're carrying with you. or a stressor. And when you remove that burden or stressor, how do you feel then? Because I can think of some burdens or stressors that if I remove them, I would feel a lot different. I would do more with my time. And I'm not saying you have to get rid of this stuff, but it's good to know what burdens might be holding you back, if they are. And another part of this exercise is that you can start removing some of the not so negative things, maybe some of the neutral things or the people or the places, maybe some of the positive people, places, or things or events. So when you remove each one at a time and you ask yourself how I feel about that, the positive stuff is probably going to make you feel not so good if you start removing the positive things. But this is just an exercise, something to reflect upon and think about. So that's one part of my answer to this question or these questions. The next answer is something I learned. I think it was from Robert Kiyosaki. He made an acronym out of the word focus. And the acronym goes, follow one course until success or successful. I tell you what, when I adopted that back in 2014, I started doing exactly that. That just struck me as something very useful. Follow one course until success. How I applied that was when it was actually 2013 was when I started the Overwhelmed Brain. And starting a business is overwhelming. There's a lot going on, a lot of gears turning, a lot of aspects to it. And, or at least for me. And, when I started it, I had all these ideas and I was trying to apply these ideas and conceptualize things and apply things. So I was doing a lot and I realized I was just overwhelming myself with too many things to do. And so I decided that in order to create any type of success or achievement in my life, or at least in this business venture that I'm on and this blog and podcast that I'm doing, I have to do one thing and finish it, finish it completely before I do the next thing. So when I heard that, follow one course until success, that made me really clarify what I wanted to work on. So I decided that I was going to work on just one thing until I was either exhausted or dead. That's my philosophy. I actually learned that from Think and Grow Rich, a book. I think it's Napoleon Hill. He didn't even say that in the book, but that's what I got from the book, is that you just continue being consistent and persistent until you're either exhausted or dead. Kind of morbid, but it works for me. It may not work for you, but for me, that meant that in order to see success of any sort or any type of achievement or any mini goal that you wanted to achieve, you had to continue to work on it until you either failed miserably because you've tried everything, or you're exhausted because you've tried everything, or you achieved it. And I just gave myself those options. There's really two options. I either fail or succeed, but I'm going to do everything I possibly can until I fail. But I don't fail. I don't let myself fail until I'm just exhausted. I can't do it anymore. And at that point, I don't try anymore. I stop. I give it up. I go away. Now, what this person's writing might be, well, I give that up in 2 weeks. It could be. But that's why I'm giving you some exercises to do to find out if there's anything holding you back, or if you are doing too many things at once. Like, I have some projects to do around the house and I have a task list. It just gets longer and longer. No matter how much I do, it gets longer. So I have to look at one task. You know, this is the key to not being overwhelmed. Look at one task and do it. And do it until it's done. And if it doesn't get finished this weekend, continue it next weekend. Don't focus on any other task. Do that one task. And that is something that I've done over and over again, and it has given me the feeling of accomplishment. This is something else I learned, and this was from Dave Ramsey, who does the financial podcast, and I used to listen to him on the radio a long time ago. He calls it the debt snowball, where you pay off the smallest debt first, And then you put the money you save and pay off the next higher debt from there. And when you do that, what ends up happening is that you feel really good that you got something off your plate. So you got rid of the first debt, and now you're working on the second debt, and you'll have extra money to put toward that second debt. And then you put all the extra money from those two debts that you don't have to pay anymore to the third debt, and it goes on and on and on. But just start at the smallest, because it gives you those mini achievements, and it makes you feel better, and the snowball gets bigger and bigger. And then pretty soon, you're wiping out debt, which is, you know, great. I mean, this is exactly how I got out of debt, actually. This is what I did. I paid off the smallest and then went to the larger and the larger until I paid it off. And I've noticed that this applies in almost every aspect of my life, is that if I take something small and I complete it, it gives me a sense of achievement. It's like that leak that you need to fix, but you still haven't gotten to it. Something else comes along, or you want to watch the latest movie on streaming or whatever, but you haven't fixed that leak. You got to commit and say, I'm going to fix that leak. This is it. Today's the day. And if you don't finish it tomorrow, I'm going to continue working on it. And if I have work, I'm going to do it after work. I'm going to do it until it's done, or I'm going to pay somebody to get it done or whatever, but I'm going to get it done. This is the day. And you make it happen. And what ends up happening is that you start building a discipline in your life. You start feeling more structure in your life because you're accomplishing things. You're creating a strong foundation for yourself. And this is something that I also talk about with boundaries. If you have poor personal boundaries, you probably have a poor foundation in your life, so that when you have failure or when you trip and fall, it's harder to get back up. With personal boundaries, when you enforce them, when you honor yourself, when you stand up for yourself, your foundation strengthens so that when you fall, you get right back up, because you have a stronger sense of self. You have a stronger structure that you're building of yourself. You feel good inside yourself. You feel more worthy. It's more fulfilling. It gives you more meaning to say what is on your mind and to tell people they're crossing the line and tell them what's acceptable and what's not. And if they disrespect you, to say, I don't appreciate being disrespected, so please don't do that again. If you can walk around with that kind of strength, that emotional strength, then you feel so good in yourself and you become more motivated to do more things in your life, because you are succeeding at the inside level, inside of you. And so the inside work that you do to create a stronger foundation and a stronger structure can lead to your life outside of you, what you do outside of you and how you show up, and then how other people show up for you. There was something magical that happened as soon as I started honoring my boundaries. And I'm not just talking about at home or with family. I'm talking about in life in general, at work, at the store, at the airport. I'm talking about in general, when somebody would violate my boundary, I had an option to say something or not. And when I chose to say something, it built character. It built strength, the emotional strength I'm talking about, inside of me. And the more I honored myself, the more I felt confident inside myself, the more comfortable I was in my own skin. And that really changed my life. And moving forward from there, I just felt good. And so doing things, you know, going out there and doing projects and achieving mini goals was so much easier, because I had some of that other stuff covered, that foundational stuff. So those things have helped me develop this mental fortitude that this person's asking about, and setting goals and things like that. You know, I used to be this way, where I would set goals and then quit after a few weeks. And I had to learn what I really enjoyed doing. I started another blog back in, 2009, 2010. And I thought, this is going to be fun. I'm just going to write about this other thing. And I was writing about this other thing. And after maybe one article, I thought, that was hard. I don't want to write about this. And I learned that there were some things that I enjoyed doing, but I didn't enjoy writing about them. I had to go through a process of learning what I liked, or learning what I liked to do and talk about and teach people. And I remember this one podcaster a long time ago said, if you want to know what you'd be best podcasting or writing about, then think of something that you could talk to anybody about for hours at a time and not get bored. And I thought, wow, that's a great question, because that really dives into what you like in general in your life. Wow, I love talking about emotional intelligence, people's behavior, why they do the things they do, healthy communication, toxic relationships, on and on. I love talking about all that stuff. And then that's when The Overwhelmed Brain came about. And then a few years ago, Love and Abuse, my other podcast, came about. So all of this stemmed from that one question. And I think that is a helpful question in your own life, if not, you know, about blogging or podcasting or anything like that. But what do you like to talk about for hours at a time? Or what do you like to do for hours at a time? And how are you implementing that in your life? If you say, well, I like to play video games 8 hours a day. Okay, that could be something that you implement in your life, but maybe in more moderation if you're not getting anything else done. But I believe in balance too. If you do nothing but work, 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 and you don't get balance, meaning you don't have any recreational time, you don't have any social connection time, like we're talking about friendships in the last segment. If you're doing nothing but one thing most of the time, you're not going to have any energy to do anything else. Oh, 98% of the time I work, and the other 2% of the time I have to clean my clothes and watch my kids, and I hope it's more than 2%. But you know what I mean? I don't have a balance. I don't feel like I'm getting enough me time. And that's so important. It is so important to get that balance in your life so that you are spreading it evenly, so that you aren't spread too thin. When you're spread too thin, you don't want to do anything. You just want to sit down or lay down and go to sleep. And that doesn't achieve anything, as you know. And a couple more things. This person wrote about a depressed state or being in depression. I look at depression as, or at least one aspect of depression is being unable to or choosing not to express what's really bothering you, really upsetting you inside. When I was the people pleaser and I didn't have any boundaries, I became depressed because people kept crossing the line with me and violating my boundaries, and I let them. I didn't want them to, but they did, and I didn't stop them. And when I didn't stop them, I swallowed anger. I swallowed upset. And every time you do that, it adds to your depression, which is why when you start honoring yourself and speaking up and telling people, no, that's not how I want to be treated, your life suddenly changes, and it can help you relieve and sometimes resolve depression. But it depends on where you are in depression. And if depression is very deep, yeah, you got to talk to a therapist. You got to really attack it. Well, that's not the right word, but you know what I mean? You really got to dive into it and make sure that you are getting the old trauma out. That's how I sometimes see depression, is that there's old trauma, unhealed emotional wounds that are deep inside of you that need to come up and out of you. I mean, I cried one time in therapy when the therapist asked about my oldest sister. She said, tell me about your oldest sister. And I started crying. And I thought, what? Where did this come from? What the heck? And I didn't know what it was about until I started talking about her. And I realized how much, I don't know, pain, upset I had, not about her, but about my mom for not being able to show up for me as much as I wanted her to and I needed her to, and having my oldest sister sort of act like my mom. So she became a surrogate mother for me, not literally, but that's what it felt like, you know, in hindsight when I was talking about it in therapy. I just started crying because I couldn't believe I held on to this feeling about my mom not being there for me when I had thought she was always there for me. So that's what happens when you go to therapy or you talk to somebody about this stuff. Emotions come up and out of you by expressing this stuff and talking about this stuff when you may not even know that some of those things are still in there. So that can be helpful as far as getting out of depression, or at least starting the path of getting out of depression. And I know there are chemical reasons for it too, and all kinds of ways. I don't want to say that this is the only solution for depression. A lot of people would poo-poo on that. I understand. I get it. I've been depressed. I was depressed for 2.5 years, and it is a joyless, emotionless place. Felt like a dark void. I felt like I was in a dark room, and I was just sitting in a chair in the middle of that dark room, and whatever used to give me joy didn't. Whatever used to make me sad didn't anymore. It was just, I could not connect until you've probably heard this before if you've been listening a while, until I realized how much hatred I had for my stepfather. And that was the day I started becoming less depressed. It started healing. I didn't know I had hatred in there. So there's a lot of stuff that goes inside that we don't know is in there until we start talking about it and expressing and considering things. You know, sometimes we're mad at people that hurt us, and sometimes we're mad at the people that didn't protect us from being hurt, even though we love them. This is what happens, is that we stuff all this down sometimes. So that can be a part of what this person's talking about in their life as well. And the more you express and the more you allow yourself to connect with those old emotional wounds or unhealed trauma, that can start the healing process as well. And of course, I recommend therapy. If you are in any type of depressed state, a therapist is going to help you one-on-one specifically with your issues. The last thing I want to say is about setting goals. My girlfriend and I were just talking about setting goals today, and her version of setting goals is to have a specific mini goal that she reaches, which I was just referring to with the debt snowball and all that, and achieve that and celebrate that. And I love doing that, but it's not necessarily the way I do things normally. In other words, when I want to set a specific goal, it can actually work against me. And this is what happens to a lot of people. You can set a specific goal, and because you don't achieve it, you can then wear yourself out and wear yourself down and disappoint yourself, so that you are repeatedly disappointed because you aren't achieving those goals. For example, when I did martial arts, one of the goals was 100 push-ups. I want to do 100 push-ups in succession. And every time I didn't achieve it, I disappointed myself. Oh, I didn't reach 100 push-ups. The thing is, it didn't motivate me to do more next time. It just made me feel like I was a loser in some ways, like I can't do 100 push-ups. And what I ended up doing to change this, because I learned that I actually hate setting goals, was to set a direction instead. I said, you know what, I'm going to move in the direction toward 100 push-ups. And if I don't achieve it, as long as I am better than the day before, have achieved a higher number, or at least the same number, but always working toward the higher number than the day before, then I will feel good about myself. And that's what changed my motivation. The way I am motivated is to set a direction or a long-term or a big picture goal that every day, as long as that trend line is moving up and to the right, I feel better about myself. I feel good. I feel motivated to continually go in that direction. And that has helped me. And so I share that with you in case it helps you. If you have this goal of finishing something and you can't reach this goal, and I tell you this knowing that it's slightly contradictory to what I just said, meaning you finish one thing and do another, focus on follow one course until success. You finish one thing and then you finish the next thing. If that doesn't work for you, then it might be time just to say, as long as I'm taking the next step in the right direction. It's sort of the compound effect of everything you do every day compounds and eventually leads to your achievement. If you do something toward your goal every single day, you will achieve something. Even if it's not what you intended to achieve, you will still achieve something. It's like Jeff Olson, he wrote The Slight Edge. He says that if you read 10 pages of a book every single day, by the end of the month, you will have read a whole book. He says if the average book is 300 pages and you read 10 pages a day, which is doable by almost anyone, then by the end of the month, you will have read a whole book. And I think that's a great philosophy. So this could help. The other stuff I talked about could help. I shot many things your way. I'm hoping that something lands, something hits the target. And if anything, I'll become the motivational coach for just a moment and say, you can do this. You can get up off the couch and do something and finish it, because the rewards will be so gratifying that once you experience it once, you'll want to experience it over and over again. You just have to get past the obstacle that's in your way, which is thinking that it's more rewarding in some way to not finish things. And just about everything I'm talking about today is in so many other episodes, but I'm kind of condensing them into this segment. The last thing I'm talking about now is secondary gain. Sometimes we do things that are a detriment because we gain in a secondary way. The example I use with that is you have a partner that's depressed and the other partner that dotes on that partner and helps them and tries to make them feel better and serves them breakfast, lunch, and dinner and just shows them all this love and attention all the time. And this other person doesn't want to be depressed. They hate the feeling of being depressed. But there's a gain being depressed. There's a benefit to being depressed because their partner is giving them all this love and attention and is there for them left and right whenever they need them. So stopping being depressed or healing the depression might not be a priority. I'm not saying that's you. I'm just saying this is the example I use for secondary gain. Somebody's depressed and the other person's giving them love and attention. If they weren't depressed, they believe the love and attention would stop. And sometimes it does. Sometimes that happens, is that the other person stops needing all this love and attention because they're healing and the relationship changes. It could absolutely change for the better. What, you're no longer depressed? This is great. Now we can be equals. Now we can share our life together, and I can be independent and you can be independent and we can be independent together, co-independent, not codependent, but we are enjoying life together now as equals. And the person that was depressed in that scenario has to understand that, yes, things are going to change. And if they realized there was a secondary gain while they were depressed, it may actually help them get out of depression because they realize that is a dependency. You know, they are depending on the other person to show up in a certain way. So in order for that to happen, they believe they should stay depressed. So that's what I'm going to leave you with today. I hope this helps. It's a challenge because we are all motivated differently by different things. But I've given you a lot, hopefully, to think about and start doing, and I hope it increases your happiness. I hope it helps you in your life and in your relationship. Thank you so much for writing, and thanks for joining me for another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I'll be right back with my final words right after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank our sponsor, BetterHelp. Go to BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com/brain and get 10% off your first month. And also check out Best Fiends, the mobile puzzle game that I know you'll love, at the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store. And I want to thank our financial backers this week, the patrons of the week, I like to call them. So Maya, Brian, Kim, Steven, Donald, Daisy, Monica, Brad, and Holly. I appreciate each and every one of you. They have joined the patron program over at moretob.com because they found value in the show and they wanted to give back. And I am grateful. Thank you so much for giving back. It means a lot to me. So if you find value in the show and you want to give back, head over to moretob.com. And for a show on how to deal with difficult relationships, I have another podcast. I talked about it earlier, called loveandabuse.com. Check it out if you're dealing with anybody that is controlling, manipulative, or emotionally hurtful in any way. And if you know you're the difficult one in the relationship, you heard me say it earlier, visit healedbeing.com. Lots and lots of lives changing, lots of relationships changing over there. I hope you get a chance to check it out. And finally, thanks to Kevin McLeod of incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And for my final words, I'm going to say this one last thing I wanted to say in the last segment, but I forgot. What it was is when you aren't motivated and you give up fast or you get tired of something really fast, if that happens over and over and over again, yes, I believe balance is a big part of it. And what I wanted to say about balance is that when you have not had your me time, enough me time for a long time, that sometimes you need to indulge in your me time for a long time in order to reset the balance or reset the scale. And what I mean by that is, I remember my girlfriend came to me and she said, I just don't know what to do. I'm confused. I'm lost. I have all these projects and I don't know where to start. She was just completely lost, had no idea what to do next. And I asked the question, well, how much time do you ever take to give yourself a break? How much time do you spend just doing nothing? She said, I never do nothing. I said, well, I think you should do nothing. And she said, that doesn't sound very productive. That doesn't sound like a contributing member of the family. She didn't use those words, but that's what I got from it. And I finally said, yes, but what's going to happen is if you allow yourself to do nothing for as long as possible, then what ends up happening is you get bored doing nothing. And I mean nothing. I mean just sitting there doing nothing. Give yourself a break. Don't occupy your mind with games or reading or anything like that. Just take a break. Unplug. And I told her, I said, just do that. Do it for days if you have to. And she said, okay, I'll try it. And she said, I think it was by the end of the second or third day. Might have been 4 days, but however long it was, she took that break and she felt compelled to do something. She was motivated at that point and she got right on it. And she just felt like a different person. She needed that break. She needed to unplug. And this happens when I play guitar. I play classical guitar sometimes. And when I take a break from it and then I go back to it, sometimes I enjoy it immensely more and I'm better at it. It's like the break from practicing helped me absorb it all or put it all in place, organize it. I think sometimes we think too much about things and it strays us from where we want to be. I used to play classical guitar every day. I used to practice all the time and I just never really got better. And then when I took longer breaks between intense practice, I suddenly got better. So that also aligned with my philosophy that you do need balance. You do need to spread things out so that you aren't so inundated all the time with the same things over and over and over again, because you will just become overwhelmed. You're just overloading your brain and it's not helpful. And so that's the last thing I wanted to say to that person who wrote, or to anyone that's listening that needed to hear that. A lot of stuff I packed into this episode today, and it's a longer one, so I'm just going to start the end right now. And that means I want you to keep your mind open, because that's how you step into your power to create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure, and above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.
Ah, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.